and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
I'm Chad Bokelman.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 607.
God, we've been recording so many episodes in a row. I think we're taking July 4th week off, Chad.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And then that would mean coming back with a review.
Again, you refresh my memory ever so quickly because we don't want to waste
Superman.
Time. Yeah, well, that's true too. But Superman won't come out till the following week, so we won't have the review for that. That won't be the first issue back. But does any Green Lantern stuff get released a week of the 4th?
I don't know. I'll check later.
Double check, just because I know we go over this like every week, but there's so much. That's the problem with having like.
Oh, next week I know for sure. Well, first of all, this week was also Green Lantern Dark.
Yes.
And then next week is Absolute.
Already? All right. So then, yeah. All right. So probably in all likelihood, the next episode will probably be Absolute. Then it'll probably be Superman, and Green Lantern Dark will fit in somewhere down the road. But
unless we double up, which is possible, guys.
It is possible. It's, to be honest, Dark is probably the one that's going to get kicked to the curb for the longest because it's bi-monthly and we could always do two issues of that back to back if we had to. Plus, we could also do the Pride thing and Dark and put both.
Oh, that's right. We still have the Pride issue.
So, but either way, just so we're not ignoring Dark. It's just you have to prioritize, and at the moment, that's probably relatively low in the totem pole. So today we are doing Green Lantern, hot off the presses, Green Lantern number 24, and let's just dive into the heart of this issue now. We pick up kind of oddly in Coast City because apparently Hal did not go to Oa, which we'll talk about. But he's in Coast City watching Carol take care of some criminals, and he's kind of like praising her for how her constructs are getting much better. And she's talking about how it's her lack of originality. Like, she kind of only has a few in her playlist. And Hal says, "Are you kidding me? I only had two." But still. And so she takes care of these criminals pretty easily, and she puts them in a cage, and then they have this heartfelt discussion, which is kind of funny. It's funny from the perspective you can. It's understandable. Some people would probably, I guess some people might cringe at this just because she's not really groveling, but she's kind of like, she gets what Hal's gone through. That's the whole point of this. When Hal's taken off and left her behind, and she used to just do it. Yeah, I know, but some people are probably going to say, well, that's kind of like. It's like excusing Hal Jordan's behavior, and it's like worshiping at the church of Hal Jordan. I'm sure some people would take it that way. But essentially, she's acknowledging the Captain Obviousness of that when Hal left, would go off in space for long periods of time and leave her behind, she would always view it through the prism of he was leaving her. But now, because she's a hero and she's dealing with her role in the Justice League, now she completely understands what Hal did and Cal talks about how relationships are tough, but it's worth it, especially with you. And I like the fact that the criminals are kind of are just getting nauseous by listening to all these guys.
Like, get a room.
Yeah. It's like, could you just please send us to jail already before Hal puts muscles on them? This is good writing and good characterization. And Carol and Hal fly off to bring the crooks to jail before they're planning on stopping off over what in Shanghai to actually get, I guess, real Chinese food. Now we continue on. In space with the the Interceptor, and this is a weird part of the conversation, seemingly out of the blue too, about asking whether Kyle's still a White Lantern, and he kind of says yes, but he has to use his willpower to keep all these emotions in check. So let's come back to that part when we actually discuss when we do the discussion. They arrive at the supposedly the you know where they're flying there and they find a destination. It's like, well, we think this is the place because it basically is a satellite. It looks almost like a Green Lantern safe house, to be fair, but we find out it's like an old Owen satellite, and they with the Green Lantern symbol on it. They arrive on it. They enter it. There's like green arrows, no pun intended, pointing the direction of where they should go. Odyssey is bright enough to figure out, you know, we should be going in the opposite way, right? Instead of like walking directly where they're telling us to go. And it's like, oh, amateurs. Now back on Earth, the Coast City Prison somehow has been named to Sunnyside Prison Camp. And as soon as they get 40 miles east of Coast City, and as soon as they start walking in to drop off these crooks, they realize something is really wrong because everybody's ridiculously joyful, including the prisoners. Once they like reach the prison outskirts, it's like they're just happy to be there. It's like, hey, man, this place is great. And most of the prisoners are just kind of like walking around on their own. They're not really being watched too much. The warden invites them, hey, have something to eat, or a salad bar is great. And everybody's, you know, it's just really, really weird. Hal wants to get out of there immediately, but Carol accepts, which for a moment makes you think maybe Carol's being enthralled with this too. But she's just, her interest has been piqued because it's sending off her emotional spectrum, spider sense. So they go check this out. You know, the salad bar, I guess, apparently is good, though Hal's already picked. This is also funny. Hal's going, you know, something's wrong with this place because they have way too many bacon bits and that's not economical. But Carol picks up on something weird, like in the basement, the signal. They go downstairs and they find the prison doctor is with this little amphibian little guy and who he's calling Happy, who's the doctor's waving to them. And the little creature is waving to them, too, which is cute. He's like the highlight of this issue.
It's an axolotl.
Yes, it's an axolotl. I was going to get to that when they actually talk about it in the next. But oh, it's gotcha. All right. But it's all right. You said it, so now I don't have to. But
you said little creature. I thought you didn't know. So
no, he's a little gotcha. Amphibian like lizard, and then they talk about it. But yes, he's adorable. He's just absolutely adorable. Now we cut back into deep space. We see this glowing green cylinder that seems to be the source of what's powering the whole place. They're coming to investigate it. Some people want to take it with them to use it against Starbreaker. Then all of a sudden we hear, you know, intruders, surrender your weapons, and the all familiar chant of because no man escapes the Manhunters, and we have a whole bunch of Manhunters online. And I do like the way Kyle's drawn here. Seeing the back of Kyle this way does kind of remind me of the good old Daryl Banks original Kyle days. I know it's not quite the same, and certainly the inking and the coloring is not the same, but it just kind of reminds me of that. Now, back at Coast City, Carol's just completely enthralled like everybody else with Happy. And we get and the doctor kind of comes clean. It's like, honestly, you know, before you guys showed up, before Happy showed up, I probably would be lying about what I'm doing. It's like, oh, no, I love experimenting on the prisoners. And we find out that this is kind of due to the Steel Fury guy that I guess Hal dealt with in the very first issue of this series. And that the doctor created basically a weapon to be from the armor of that guy. And he kind of thought it was essentially going to, and he was testing it before he was going to test it on Steel Fury himself. He decided to test it on Happy, acknowledging he expected it just to cut Happy in half. But instead, it made Happy glow. He kept on glowing. And, of course, Happy ended up becoming just that. He kind of became like an embodiment of the emotion of happiness. And everybody around him kind of became happy. And the entire prison became happy. And Hal and Carol decide, well, we pretty much have to take this guy, take him away to understand what's going on because it's part of the fractured spectrum. And, of course, this idea of taking away Happy triggers another emotion, which is avarice. And the doctor becomes full of avarice, the entire prison population becomes full of avarice, and they all start attacking Carol and Hal. What's interesting about this is Happy and Carol tend to have this emotional connection at one moment in time, and this basically short circuits the avarice. It's able to dampen the emotions of what's going on around them, and that sets off, you know, the bells in their head that, hey, maybe this actually has more value because this might be able to be used against Starbreaker and because of what's going on with the emotional spectrum, this could actually and sorrow, this could actually be a weapon. So Carol and Hal and eventually fly off with Happy, but they're still going to Shanghai to get some Chinese food first. Hal and his priorities. We'll come back and talk about that. Now on the Owen satellite, Superboy and company, they're laying into these manhunters. They figure out that the cylinder is really what's powering the manhunter, so it has to be taken down. Hey, another reference of a Philosopher's Stone, though they're not in the same reference. The Philosopher's Stone that Odyssey has that she throws at the cylinder, it breaks the cylinder, does achieve its desired effect that the manhunters all power down and collapse, but then the power source escapes the cylinder, it flies back to the interceptor, then all of a sudden it starts building something, and what we find out is what it actually is building is it basically reconstitutes, from a animated series perspective, Aya in her first form, the first time we've ever seen her in a comic book. And this gives us the actual title of the issue was Because I'm Happy, Jeremy Adams, writer, Zermanico, artist and cover artist, Romolo Fajardo Jr., colorist, Dave Sharp, letterer. I'm not going to go through all the varying cover artists. Assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Paul Kaminsky. We still get the requisite Superboy Jerry Siegel credit. And this is the part that I really didn't like about the issue. The only part, really. The next issue, the race to finish the Lanterns is on as the Starbreaker Supremacy begins. An epic crossover where Green Lantern Corps begins in the oversized, probably should be oversized, 25th issue. So basically, this storyline is continuing, and it doesn't sound like it's going to end anytime soon because now we're getting another part of it, quote-unquote, beginning. But as an issue, the issue is probably one of the best issues we've had in a long, long time. But the hint of what's to come, moving beyond the Aya thing, which doesn't do all that much for me, but I'm not going to hold that against it. We did kind of figure that was coming. But that
I did call it. My energy was lost, but I don't have to read the whole thing. But when I sensed the ship that brought me to life, I had to
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's just like she sensed what was going on with the manhunters and that she was in act. Yeah. She didn't expect that to happen.
Yeah.
So Aya's back. So Aya is back. And then whatever that means. And yeah. So.
Yeah. So Happy. I'm confused about how he came to be because there's obviously no problem whatsoever with anything other than a sentient being generating an emotion if the spectrum is fractured. It seems to be random. Apparently, Zelaya Zox was more angry than Atrocitus in the given moment that the Red Lantern Corps felt. I don't know how that works, but it does seem to be relatively random. So I am okay with an axolotl generating a random emotion. But is it because the axolotl felt extremely happy in that moment, or because, as he says, the Steel Fury guy who wore a piece of armor, we were told that was old, based on old Manhunter tech uses the emotional spectrum and willpower and stuff like that. That's how Hal was able to cop a charge at the beginning of the whole series. He says he used that tech to then create a refracting prism. Did that generate the emotion somehow into Happy, or did Happy somehow feel the emotion?
My natural tendency was to think that Happy just is generally that this was just a particularly happy creature, despite the fact what was being done to him at that moment. But it probably is a combination of the two. It's something to do with something was refracting the emotions. The prism was refracting something, and it channeled the inner happiness that this creature, the innocence and the happiness this creature normally felt, that was at its essence, and that helped him manifest that emotion, which also protected him, obviously, from getting cut in half. But, yeah. So he's adorable. When I first saw it, it's like, oh, is this, which I guess in theory, if there was ever going to be a happiness core, I guess he would be the entity of the happiness core. But when I first saw it, I'm thinking, is this a baby entity of something in the emotional spectrum? It's also interesting that maybe not accidental too, though. I think they should have made it a different shade. That obviously the color of Happy is almost identical to Violet. Happy and love are super related, which I guess is not unrealistic. I think they could have given him a slightly different shift color, because he did look way I mean, he's white, but I guess that's I'm kind of assuming he might have been. I'm trying to go back to the original art. Was he white to begin with? It's kind of hard to it's kind of hard to tell because you see the because he's it's almost like he's glowing purple from the minute they start blasting him with the laser. But yeah, that was good. Again, the Kyle, I mean the Kyle stuff, I guess ultimately now we're kind of seeing what the point of this whole Kyle excursion was, nothing more than to get as an quote-unquote excuse to get Aya into the story, which again is self-serving to a large extent. A certain amount of people will be happy about that. I don't know how it's going to pay off in the story. Just like it, obviously part of the payoff is going to be when Razor sees Aya for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, trust me, I really love the animated show, but do I really need a lot of this stuff in the comic books unless it's going to serve a major, a real purpose other than going down memory lane? Not necessarily.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's also circling back to Happy real quick, his contact or whatever with Carol wiping out the outbreak of Avarice, is that just then we would think because love and happiness maybe equals satisfaction and you don't need to feel greed? And do we think maybe it just wipes out greed, or because they think we should take him as a weapon against sorrow?
Well, she says this might be able to help Nathan or anyone who manifests part of the spectrum. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're thinking that he can be used against sorrow, could you be being mistaken here?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's not quite how you phrased it, but yes. Is the working hypothesis, could it be absolutely incorrect, and could it be extremely limited in what emotions it can deal with? Yes. But she is thinking big picture that, hey, because arguably, maybe, even if happiness and love can only cancel out greed, even though you would think that'd be more likely to cancel out hate, to be perfectly honest with you. But maybe happiness combined with hope, or happiness combined with another part of the emotional spectrum, then can cancel out other parts of the emotional spectrum. To me, and the one thing I didn't really mention here, which relates to, you know, an odd place to begin the issue, it seems very, very irresponsible. I'm not saying Hal's thinking with the little head as opposed to thinking with his heart here, but it's kind of irresponsible to put in charge of delivering that power source to Oa to just pawn it off on Nort and assuming that he's going to be able to get the job done and deliver the mail. That's even assuming that Nort's okay, which we both have doubts about considering how he acted in that last two issue arc, or where he appears on the last page. And so it's kind of mostly a one issue arc, but he did have that cameo appearance at the end of the issue before that. He's showing some signs that there's something potentially rotten in Denmark, and you're trusting this guy in charge with delivering the power source. Plus, he's an F up to begin with. So why would you do that? That seems pretty goddamn irresponsible of Hal Jordan, which, again, you know, can make a case, well, that's typical Hal Jordan. But under the circumstances, he really shouldn't be dilly-dallying around with Carol at the moment as much as he is. And this is where you can make a case the pendulum is swinging too far the other way, that now Hal's acting like this love-struck kid, and kind of like not entirely shirking his responsibilities, but the first chance he gets, he's going to run off. They friggin' know the entire emotional spectrum arguably is at risk here, let alone maybe the entire universe is at risk. But the emotional spectrum as a whole is at risk, and he's kind of like running off to do these just to, you know, to hold hands with Carol. Now, it serves a purpose, but not because he knows it's going to serve a purpose. It's just because the plot is it's a plot convenience that it serves a purpose, but he had no way of knowing that.
No. Yeah, the risk is even there, because like when, not to bring it back to Happy, but he does acknowledge, like he even says, let me, what does he say? He says, let me get Happy before he like in the deposits explodes.
yes. Working under the premise that he channeled the emotions in the same kind of way that everybody, the other lanterns that we have seen, even though, to be fair, not all of them have exploded. They may have exploded over time. Not all of them exploded. And to be fair, it didn't look like Happy was using that emotion. That emotion was having the same kind of effect on Happy. It's almost like if he can diffuse the happiness through other people, as long as maybe he would only explode if he was literally by himself and there was no other living being for to feel happiness around him. Yeah. But we really don't know about that. The other thing about this that I didn't like was the idea, which was again, it's a completely random conversation because I don't understand why this would come up in conversation. Now you could assume maybe they're just chit chatting and BSing on the ship, which again would make you wonder why this would come up in conversation anyway, because why would Odyssey ask this, or even why would Connor bring it up about the whole, are you still a White Lantern? And then Kyle's explanation doesn't really make any sense based on what we've seen. I mean, that he's really a White Lantern, but he's kind of like using his willpower to keep all these emotions in check. Is that because the emotional spectrum's so screwed up? Because I guess if you wanted to go down that road, that might explain Kyle sitting in the corner rocking and holding his knees for like 12 issues because of the fact that he basically almost had to be completely still. You know, completely, literally neutral emotionally, or else something would go wrong. But nobody would really know that. And why would Kyle know that? Kyle seemingly only became the White Lantern because of the risk to the emotional spectrum at the time, and because he had to finally leap into action. But there was they never gave us an explanation why he wasn't a White Lantern afterwards. This would have been a more valuable time. Would that not have been the best time to do it? The issue after he was a White Lantern, after they made him a Green Lantern again, have him have this conversation with somebody then? So Lisa would explain why he was back in Green Lantern form as opposed to, yeah, you were a White Lantern last time we saw you, and now you're green again.
I think they're setting up, they're bringing it up to bring it up later. Just as a reminder, this is how it's working because we're going to use it later. And I think Happy is actually critical to this because of what you mentioned. This is just a theory that's been developing in my head. If because you said Happy, in the hands of a different Lantern might, you know, negate something else or do something else. Technically, Hal didn't touch Happy, but Carol did. So he just used a construct to get him out of there. So we didn't see him interact directly with Hal. What would happen then if a broken part of the emotional spectrum interacts with Kyle?
That is true. That's very interesting too. Could Kyle channel or potentially master a broken part of the spectrum as well as everything else,
or somehow be infected by it? Or
cutting to the chase, it would be nice if when all this ends, whenever the hell it's going to end, that Kyle would play a major role in doing it. Just like, in all honesty, it would be better just to make Kyle a White Lantern again. I don't mind. Again, the explanation they give here is not that it's horrible at all. It's just the fact that it's like 5 issues overdue. But it's the fact that at least it would, again, I think what we talked about semi-jokingly when he became White Lantern during the end of the Derlin thing, that like in case of emotional spectrum emergency, break glass and Kyle would go white again. That I'm okay with the fact that he could become a White Lantern when he needed to, but again, this is all crap that is just being dumped on us without any real explanation for it. Because certainly there certainly was never anything since Kyle stopped being a White Lantern in during the whatchamacallit, the Venditti run. There's been nothing that ever to indicate that he could become White Lantern again anytime he wanted to. But the reason he's not is for this reason or for that reason. That's never been anywhere in the books. So there's been no reason to believe that's been the status quo. So if that's supposed to be the status quo either right now or the status quo going back to the Derlin thing because the emotional spectrum was being broken apart and it was being shattered, then these are all things that the bad thing about how Jeremy's been handling the book is that these are all valuable things that could have been – would have made more sense for us to find out a little bit about this earlier when it would make sense. And again, even this conversation, it just seems this conversation in particular seems out of place. It's like we talked about how Kyle just literally stopped being a White Lantern once they started beginning like the fractured spectrum storyline without even a hint of an explanation. This would have been that explanation right off the bat that, yeah, I'm still a White Lantern, but the way the emotions are going on, the way the spectrum is, everything's kind of like out of control that I don't want to give into that. It's dangerous for me to give into all those emotions at one time or to let anything take over me. But so I've got to use willpower to keep everything under control and remain green, not just for the sake of me, but for the sake of the spectrum. But no, but it's a good issue. I would say that it's a really good issue.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely enjoyed it. And I got to say, the last thing I'll say, the minute I saw the almost comical arrows in green directing them, I knew I was right, that it was Aya. Obviously, I had to wait until the actual thing because the Manhunter showed up, which I did mention was a possibility. But we knew anyways because of the solicits.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is Aya, because I remember it was one of the earlier episodes, right, when her little energy was like trailing them, but it could only go so far into the prison because of the yellow crystals. Like, she could guide them through the prison. Do you remember one of those early episodes of the
anime? Vaguely, yeah. But it sounds familiar, but yeah.
Yeah, the just green energy directing you to where you need to be through an unfamiliar place via tech. I was like, that's Aya. It's got to be Aya. So I was pretty excited. So yeah, I know. Yeah, you Mark is definitely a fan of the animated series, and I could see why you wouldn't necessarily want to marry the two 100%. But I was excited to see Aya for sure.
And I can understand that. I can absolutely understand that. Now, I'd still be interesting to see if we get any kind of if Ion's return still has anything to do at all with either, you know, with either Aya coming back online the way she has and the surge of the power. And yeah, even it's still, I mean, theoretically, they all could still be tied together. But we have to find out. But at least soon we're going to get the explanation, I guess. So now, hopefully, yeah, of why the entities are even here, let alone their role in the story.
And I'm going to call it at some point, and I'll probably be wrong, but I am anticipating a flirting between Aya and Kyle.
Okay.
Obviously one way, because Aya is going to be like, where's Razor? But but I'm anticipating Kyle doing his thing.
Kyle needs to be neutered.
Hal Jr.
Well, if Kara were pregnant, Hal better ask for a paternity test.
Oh, man. But yeah, I think that's all I got to say. But I did enjoy this issue. And great art all the way throughout.
This is definitely one of the best issues that by far, probably the best issue by far since they started this Fractured Spectrum arc, even with some of the weird maybe plot points or why they're going in certain directions based on necessity, but still it still makes for good storytelling.
Absolutely. All right, what's next?
Ever so briefly, for what is Mark seeing, though I'm not proud to have seen this, it was kind of like there were three choices. I didn't see anything last week, so we were making up, and on Monday of this week as we're recording this, we had to go pick something to see. So I went to see Brideheart, that Rebel Wilson movie, which is almost like Die Hard at a wedding. There are some funny moments of it, right, in it, and Rebel Wilson's always funny. But it's, needless to say, is she overly believable as a secret agent? No, she's not. I guess that's probably part of the humor. It's like, yeah, no, the suspension of disbelief ain't gonna fly in that. And the plot's kind of stupid, and there are some members of the cast that make it enjoyable, but would I recommend seeing this movie? No, not at all. If it's free on streaming somewhere, yeah, there are worse things to watch. And that will be it until, you know, Megan 2.0 will be tomorrow as we record this. The only other thing I have, which is not related to movies at all, even though, out of curiosity, did you watch the new Fantastic Four trailer?
Yes and no. I want to see it on the big screen, but I've seen it on my phone in a very tiny format.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the best trailer. I don't know how much it moves the bar one way or the other. I think it is absolutely the best trailer, probably a trailer they should have come out with. It's either the first or the second trailer. Cause again, at this stage of the game, I think I don't know how much it will move the needle one way or the other. If you're interested in seeing it, you're probably going to see it anyway. If you're on the fence, I don't think this will be a big needle mover across the board. But it looks, again, for what it is, and I still have some interest in this movie. That trailer does. It is a better trailer. But what I was going to say was, which I didn't realize until like till 3 days ago, that you keep your finger on the pulse of this more. You probably just didn't care at all about the latest NFT Funko drop.
No.
The West Coast Avengers, which is kind of which is really, to be fair, that's the label that they call this drop. But most of the collectible pops have absolutely nothing to do with the West Coast Avengers. So the big prizes of this, and this was, as we're recording this on the 25th, they dropped on the 24th, which also tells you the lack of interest in this wave, let alone the declining interest in NFTs, because you could get into the pre-queue like a half an hour before, because it went on sale like 2 o'clock Eastern. And from that, once it hit 2 o'clock Eastern, it didn't even take me 2 minutes from the time I got into the queue to get to the point where I could purchase. I chose not to at the time, and then I kind of got weak, and Jim did the same thing. I don't think he bought anything, but Jim, after I told him how little a time it took me to get in, Jim just joined the queue like maybe like 5 minutes after I got out of it, and he got into purchase in 2 minutes too. I eventually went in and I bought one big pack because I really liked the majority of these collectibles, and that's the reason why I rolled the dice. So
I'm looking at them now. I only like two of them.
Yeah. So the biggest prizes were the Flocked Tigra,
mm-hmm.
which That's I liked. I would have liked to have gotten that one.
and the smart move making it flocked.
Yes. The Ultron one, which seemingly is the most popular one. If you look at what it's selling for on the drop marketplace, it is the most popular one, because those were both 999 runs. They had the High Evolutionary, which, that's the one I wanted, and I just bought one today off of eBay for, like, honestly, I bought it off a seller for $34. I already have the token in my Dropbox, so I will be getting him. I did, so it's a high of, that's a 1900, I believe. I think he's in the 1900 run. They have Wonder Man, not the one in the trench coat, just the one kind of with like the Charlie Brown zigzag black t-shirt, but the glasses. I like that one. I like the Wanda, considering the Scarlet Witch one with the different hairstyle and everything else, not with the, and more, almost like more like the, looking more like the Lizzie Olsen Scarlet Witch that we saw when she was actually part of the Avengers. That kind of, it's not from that, but it's similar. I'm trying to think. Claw.
I like Mockingbird.
Yeah, I was getting the Mockingbird. Mockingbird is the easiest one to get. That's the one that you literally can get dirt cheap, even on eBay. And of course, the Freddy Funko, what is Hawkeye, which is the absolute worst of the group. But overall,
will be probably the second most popular outside of Ultron.
Who, Freddy Funko?
Yeah, Freddy Funkos are
covered. I'll have to look. I'll be curious to look at the drop marketplace and see what he's going for, if any were available. I didn't see any were available the multiple times that I've looked. That was the only one of the
Even though he has a bigger print run, I guarantee you, he's got more than Wonder Man, more than Scarlet Witch, more than Claw.
He's the same as Mockingbird, I believe. I believe it's the same production run as Mockingbird.
No, Mockingbird is 5,000. Freddy Funko is 2,400.
Was Mockingbird 5?
Yeah, that's what it says online.
I thought...
So Ultron and Tiger are both $9.99, but even though Freddy Funko is the second highest available...
Yeah, you're right.
He'll still be fairly expensive because a lot of people go after Freddy Funkos. There's a special niche market for it.
Yeah, I mean, and I can kind of understand that. Let's put it this way. That was the one that I absolutely didn't want. I'm looking to see if there's any.
I do like Mockingbird though, but I don't. Again, I'm sort of out of the Funko game unless Funko starts doing more like, I don't know, Bill and Ted pops, because I only ever did just Bill and Ted. So like if they started doing any of the people they picked up from Time or their daughters from the third movie or like anything, you know, Death or whatever, like I would get back into the Funko game. I saw they were doing, you know, Mark and I talked about this last time we recorded, but Land Before Time Funkos, I was tempted because that was a big part of my childhood. But even then I was like, yeah, I'm done. So unless they come out with more stuff for the collection as I already have, or something crazy that I want, like Bill and Ted, I think I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. Again, it's interesting. Looking at the actual drop marketplace, I do not see any of the Freddy Funkos listed yet. I'm not quite sure why. It seems odd, unless some of these packs are still available and nobody bought them yet, which is weird. But Mockingbird is absolutely dirt cheap. Even you could get a Mockingbird for like $8.65. Wonder Man is as cheap as $23.50. Scarlet Witch is $39.99. Claw's dirt cheap too. It's under $18. High Evolutionary was cheap too. I don't think Jim was in a position to. I think they changed the rules, so I don't think he could have bought them anymore. Else, I probably would have waited and gotten one off off of the drop marketplace. But for $34, that wasn't that big a deal. So I already got my token. But it is interesting considering, again, it's obviously based on the popularity of the character that Ultron and Tiger are both in the same production run, both Grails. But Ultron is the cheapest Ultron on drop is $214, while the cheapest Tiger is $145.
Yeah, the other thing I don't like about the Marvel Funkos is they're all bobbleheads. Not that I'd take them out of the box, but they're all bobbleheads. So
that's not a huge problem with some of them. I mean, some of the DC, like I said, some of the DC ones are. They're just not that common. It's just not the same way. So that's why I don't know if it's 100.
By license for some reason. That's why all the Marvel ones have to be bobbleheads for some reason. I forget the exact who has the license that's forcing them to do this. But Marvel, all the Marvels have to be bobbleheads.
You're probably right. It's making me wonder if all my Spider-Man ones were. I guess they would have to be, I suppose.
Definitely all the recent ones. I don't know if it goes back to throughout all of Funko's history, but a vast majority of all of the recent ones absolutely are bobbleheads. I know that for sure.
But I probably won't open mine anyway. And as far as the ones I actually did get, I didn't get anything. I mean, to be fair, looking at the general cards, it's not that there aren't that many and they're not that great. But I at least got one Vision. I didn't get the most uncommon one. I think I got the common Vision. Again, it's one of those things where you kind of go against instinct. You figured you could probably get one cheap, and in retrospect, I could have basically saved myself like the amount of money I ended up spending to get the High Evolutionary. I could have just not bought the pack at all, and I could have just waited. But sometimes you don't know. I mean, I figured that one would not be particularly popular, because. But the production runs were relatively low, and that always gave you a little bit of pause, because if the production run is low, sometimes it makes it easy for people to hoard them. And
I would only go after Mockingbird if I knew that I would have a chance to get it signed by Adrienne Pilecki, which is one of my actress crushes. She played Bobby in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV show.
I can tell you right now, if you go on eBay right now, you can get one. Actually, that's the same person I just bought mine from. You can get for $14. You can get one.
I don't think I've ever seen Pilecki on the con circuits. I don't think I've ever.
But for $14, you don't want to roll the dice.
I don't know.
This guy is good. Up North 2 is the seller. I can send you the link. That's the guy I just bought my High Evolutionary from tonight, and he already sent me over the. He already put it in my drop. And my Dropbox, my drop account. So I already have High Evolutionary sitting there until the time comes to redeem him. So
yeah,
let's see if he's got Freddy Funko as a kid.
Pilecki's a crush for sure.
He has them all. He actually does have Freddy Funko for $99. So see, Ultron, even on this guy's listings, Ultron is the big winner.
For the people out there, because I don't know exactly when this episode's going to come out, but it should be around this time anyway, so it should be relevant. I have been buying up one of each of the Guy Gardner pieces of merchandise available for the upcoming Superman movie as much as I can find them at the very least. And as of right now, as we record this, everything is in my possession except for one of the things I ordered, which is the Superpowers McFarlane guy. But otherwise, I have all the Spin Master stuff. I have the ring from Hot Topic. I have the Funko. I have a T-shirt. And the other thing I can't find to buy is the actual prop ring that you can buy specifically sized. I have it from one source that I don't... As of right now, I haven't confirmed, but I don't see why this person would be lying. Apparently, this person went out and bought like the regular ring that comes in the box that you can choose your size and everything, and also got the Hot Topic ring and says they're the exact same thing. The only difference being, of course, if you buy the one in the box, you get to choose the size, whereas the one from Hot Topic that comes on the necklace, I busted out my Manly Bands ring thing. It's like a – this ring that comes from Hot Topic is like an 8.5 or a 9 ring size, something like that. So obviously it comes at a preset size, but if it's the exact same thing, I very likely won't have it in hand by the time the movie comes out, and that is relevant because – I want to make a YouTube video unboxing all of this stuff for you guys ahead of the film. So as you guys hear this, if it's close around to the time the movie comes out, the week the movie comes out, check our YouTube channel, Lantern Cast Vids. There will be a video of me unboxing all of the Guy Gardner merch I could get my hands on in time for the movie.
That will be cool.
For sure. Yeah, I sent an email to McFarlane today. I haven't heard back yet because I ordered it on the 16th and it's still showing awaiting fulfillment. So it says it ships in June, though. But I mean, technically, it's not the end of June. So,
yeah, you know, it's going to be a fine line, just like as we discussed last week, the fact that the Guy Gardner pop is technically in stock with Entertainment Earth, but yet it still hasn't arrived at Big Bad Toy Store yet.
So I haven't checked Funko, but I signed up for the alert, so I would assume I would have gotten an email. Funko's website, last time I checked, before I placed the Entertainment Earth order when we were recording.
Oh yeah, we looked. Yeah, it was still not available. So which again does make you wonder. It does make you wonder exactly what the criteria is for who gets what, because
still coming soon.
Yeah, no matter how you slice it, it doesn't make a lot of sense why realistically speaking, there's no way that Entertainment Earth should get a supply of these. I mean, unless they're getting them basically like almost like a black market behind closed doors supply. There's really no way they should be getting those to say that, I think, hot off the truck like they did last week and have some in stock, when meanwhile Funko itself doesn't have them in stock. But it does happen, because it reminds me of some of the crap which people complain about all the time with, like, Dr. Squatch, when there's a soap that's coming out that they're going to sell on their own website, but they also have a deal to sell it with one of their retail partners, usually Walmart, and yet Walmart will get it first, and sometimes they'll get it first by 2.5-3 weeks, and it drives people nuts because of the fact that it's like, how the hell are these people selling this stuff before you're selling it? It's like, at the very least, you know.
It might be a situation which Funko fans are very familiar with, especially with shared drops like Walmart exclusives, or more specifically Target exclusives, street dates. A lot of times, for those of you playing along at home, in the Funko market especially, they'll send out all these Funkos to the various stores, but they'll street date them for a specific date that you can only buy it on or after that date. But a lot of them, of course, you know, you're just trying to get inventory unboxed and out onto the shelves of your retail space, just like any other retail store. So they don't really think about that. So you'll go out looking for a specific Funko because you heard, oh my God, so-and-so has it. So you run out there to go grab it. You grab it, you find it, you walk up to the cashier, and then suddenly you can't buy the damn Funko because it's street dated. For a date beyond the date that you're currently trying to buy it, so they won't sell it to you, but then they'll also just walk it down back to the same shelf and put it back on the shelf because they're too lazy to grab all of them and take them back into the back until the actual street date. Well, I wonder if they're getting all the actual product out to the marketplace, because this guy Gardner doesn't have a sticker on him, so he's not exclusive to any one store. So I imagine he's going to be a common Funko found at lots of different retailers, but because he's appearing also in the online store of Entertainment Earth, they don't give a shit about the street date.
But the problem with that, you could be correct. However, the problem is, depending on where they get their product, if we assume they're getting the product from Funko, if you were breaking street date consistently, or even you don't have to do it consistently, but theoretically, you probably wouldn't get completely smacked down for doing it one time. But if you were breaking street date consistently, then obviously there's something that can be done about it, because Funko could just ship you that stuff much later than they normally would, because they can't trust you to not break street date. Yeah. That would be, I think back in the day, from my Walden Books experiences, because books are, you know, books almost always had street date, especially hardcovers. Anything that was new had street dates that you couldn't break street date. That if you did, then that's usually what how you would be punished by it, is that not across, not the whole chain, but if one store in particular was getting a reputation for, hey, they broke street date on this book, they broke street date on this book, then the companies would, or the manufacturers or the warehouse, usually that stuff I think would come from, that stuff might have come directly from our warehouse, but either way, you'd be less likely to get that item like a week in advance or even 4 days in advance. You might literally get it either the day it arrived, probably not, but the day before it arrives, you would get it. So your ability to really break street date was extremely limited. So I agree it's possible it's a street date thing, but again, it only would make sense to me for Entertainment Earth if they had like another supplier, or they were like getting their, let's say they were getting a certain amount of some of these directly, let's say not from the Funko warehouse, but let's say they had a connection somewhere like over in China or someplace else where they got theirs first. And if there is no street date, because they're probably, to be fair, like on this one, there probably isn't a street date. There probably is not a street date on these. And because there'd be no reason to, because there's no surprise, because we all know what these look like, unless there was which I don't believe there is, a chase character that nobody knows about in the box. The reality is, people, we all know what these look like. So there's no, it doesn't spoil the movie by having these toys on the shelf, because seeing the figures would technically spoil it already. So they just somehow got stock, and it's just weird that nobody else, but it. But it varies, you know. But Entertainment Earth actually seems to, they do seem to get stuff a little faster than Big Bad Toy Store.
Yeah, guys, if you haven't experienced street date crap, what I call street date blue balls, you haven't lived, because I have never been more pissed inside of a Target than in a street date issue, because everybody. You know, at this point probably knows about my Teeth and Tongues Funko collection that is on the main wall in front of me right now. I collect all the symbiote pops. Some of the more popular ones are like the Blacklight ones, because there's only two of them. Well, technically there was only one by the time this one came out. The Blacklight Eddie Brock Venom Funko was a Target exclusive, and I found it on the shelf, and I was like, oh my god, I found a Blacklight. And I, because first of all, guys, the symbiote Funkos, lots of people are into them, so that's already a popular, like, I don't know, franchise of the Funko, of the Funko world. But then you also throw in the Blacklight collectors, it's impossible to find Blacklight symbiote stuff in the wild. So when the Eddie dropped, I found it in the wild, I was so stoked. So I took it up, and of course they street dated it. I could not buy it, and I was going to crash out. I was going to go full Karen in that store. But luckily I bit my tongue, and I left, and I came back later, and I did the thing I try not to do, which other people, especially the Pokemon crowd likes to do, is I found another one and I hid it under a shelf so I could go get it later when the street date dropped.
Yeah.
Because like I said, they're too lazy to take them all off the shelf and back into the back stock until the street date. So they just end up putting it back on the shelf.
Yeah, that's never good. That's never a good thing either. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Nothing is more frustrating than when somebody puts something on the floor that, yes, shouldn't be on the floor yet, and they can't sell. And even if they wanted to sell it, sometimes they can't because it's not in the computer yet, or it's loaded into the system where it doesn't become active until it hits the street date. That, oh no, we can't sell it to you. And it's like, well, you put it on the damn floor, which is not, and which of course is. Again, because unfortunately you're leaving the stocking of the floor to people who probably don't give a shit. If you're lucky, I'm only half kidding. You're lucky if they can probably read anyway, let alone process what the hell a street date is in some cases. And it's like, but that's also, you can make the case why people need to organize their shit instead of just grabbing a pallet and hey, put this pallet out. It's like, you can kind of pay attention to what's on it, because anything that has a street, that's what we used to do, because that one of the weirdest things we ever had a street date on back when I worked at Kmart. And I think this was the first time it ever happened. This was back when, The Hunchback of Notre Dame came out, the Disney animated movie. That I believe that was the first time for the children's, you know, the children's character footwear that we actually had street dates. So we had all this crap, all these boxes and boxes of boxes, which of course the day they arrived in freight, it was great because it was stuff you never had, because you didn't have to worry about how, like, if you had 100 boxes of freight and like 25 boxes were all Hunchback of Notre Dame shoes that you knew you didn't have to deal with for like two weeks or three weeks. That was great. It's like, oh, just bring it into the stock room, stack it somewhere, and that's like a quarter of your freight. You don't even have to worry about putting out or finding a place for it in the stock room or on the or out on the floor. But it was like, that was the first character shoe or anything that we had a street date for. And I thought that was funny because I was already used to street dates from working at Walden Books, but it's like, that's really funny seeing footwear with a street date.
a lot of reasons though, guys, it gets put out though, is just because a lot of retail stores, and I experienced this myself when I was at my retail stores, is there's limited space back in the storage and receiving area. And in addition to getting your pallets and stuff like that off the truck, that's also the place all the shelves are, all the pallet jacks, the forklift, the damn cardboard baler. Like you only have so much room in the freight area. And then they come in and they tell you, we want the truck unloaded completely by blank. We want everything up on pallets and ready to be hauled out to the floor to be unboxed and put on shelves. And every pallet should be off the floor by the time we open it, blah, blah, blah. So the goal is not even like, and imagine if you had multiple things you had to street date, like multiple different things that go into different departments and things like that. So now you're taking up more and more space. And what if something that's street dated for the Superman movie, but there's also stuff that's coming in that's maybe street dated for maybe the Fantastic Four movie, since they're in the same month, but maybe they're getting product early. So now you have to dedicate space to two different street dated items and things. So I completely understand how that crap gets out on the floor, but it doesn't make it any less frustrating.
No. And again, it's one of those things where if somebody is in charge of looking at what's on the pallet and everything else, and or organizing the stuff, especially when stuff, because they do get broken down by departments, to make sure that because usually you're going to know that's the thing also, who's ever in charge of each department, let alone in the store, but who's ever in charge of each department is going to know well in advance that you're going to be getting stuff with a street date, because they tell you even back then, back in the friggin' 90s and stuff, when the computer system was certainly a lot less intricate as it is now, that the reality is that we would know that, oh, you would get the update and stuff about even if sometimes they were phone calls and stuff, you would just know that you're going to then, plus in all honesty, they would give you the heads up that you were going to be getting this stuff, and usually you would have, I would have a list of stuff that was coming in from a Kmart perspective, that you would know the stuff that was coming in, I think, ahead of time on the truck, that you would know what stuff was coming in this week, I believe, because just like you always had to count the number of boxes. Luckily, it wasn't as big a deal for us, because we were always the last 99% of the time, we were the last delivery. So almost everything left in the truck was going to be ours. And so if there was an extra case, I think it was always up to us, to take it or not take it. But the reality is, yeah. So you would know, like I knew. And the reason why they did it for us was easy with the Quasimodo stuff and the Esmeralda stuff, was because we were having, right when those items were first shipping, there was a big character footwear sale on, and they purposely did not want all that new merchandise going out while all that stuff was marked down. They wanted to wait a little bit, which was, smart business. They wanted to wait, so it was not. I mean, there might have been a specific sale, not as much on some of those items, but they did not want it to be like when there was like a 25% off all character footwear sale, because then they would blow out through a lot of their stock, and they didn't want to do that. So, but yeah, memories.
Bond or otherwise.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. We have anything else?
I don't think so today.
All right, guys, if they want to reach out to us and let us know what they thought of this issue and Aya's return, or join us in the toy talk or whatever, what do they do?
Or if they just feel happy.
Yeah.
Somebody asked you out there. If they feel really, 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 really happy. LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, hashtag Geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.